take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
And thank you for joining me, your host, Nurse Jodi O'Malley, on Nurses Out Loud. Today, I have a really special guest with me, which I think will speak to a lot of you parents, community activists, as well as grandparents. I have with me today Lori Kroll, who is a middle school nurse on the East Coast. And she saw one of my posts on Instagram. She follows us on Nurses Out Loud. And she had something to say about what has been going on in the school system, right? With the children that she is seeing coming into the office. And Lori and I just chatted up very briefly before we're recording right now. And I cannot wait to get her take on the COVID protocols over the last 4 years, primarily the shutting down the schools and, you know, all of this DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, the gender dysphoria that we're seeing out there now. We'll see what topics we're able to touch on, but without further ado, welcome Lori Kroll. She is the owner and founder of Kroll Wellness. She received her functional practitioner license. Lori, welcome to Nurses Out Loud. Thank you for being bold and reaching out.
It is a pleasure to be here with you. I've been following your story since the beginning. Was it 2-3 years ago when it all came out? So it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you. You know, let's just get started with, you know, what you're seeing in the school with children and, you know, the coping skills, if you will, mental health issues. Let's start there, Lori.
So mental health, anxiety, depression, all of it has been increasing. But since the pandemic and the lockdown, it has probably escalated. I can't give you a percentage, but exponentially. I think, you know, keeping those kids at home led to so many things that nobody thought about, right? You know, the isolation, social anxiety, behind a screen, you know, they don't have any coping skills because, you know, they were home for what, from March to the rest of that school year. And we didn't return until in-person schooling till the following year. And when we came back in the fall, we were mixed. You know, there were some kids that came back in person. There were others that remained online. And then we had like something that was intermediate for the kids that were being isolated when they were exposed to COVID. And at times that would be up to a month where they would be out, you know, because the protocol was if somebody else in the family got it, then we had to isolate them even longer. It just led to more and more and more anxiety. And when they did come back, they were scared, you know, they were scared because of what was being told to them. They didn't know how to relate to one another. You know, they saw each other with masks on. There were kids that were having play dates with masks on. You know, it was just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I don't even know where to begin, but that's
I know. Yeah, that's a start. I think the mask, let's talk about issues you were seeing as a school nurse with the mask. Because to me, that was one of the biggest things that really drove a visceral reaction, you know, knowing that we are putting a mask on our kid and we are telling them that you have to protect your breath because you could kill grandma if you're around her breathing. Like, what in the insanity was that? How right. was that as a school nurse for you?
It was horrible. First of all, I didn't have it on unless I had to, unless somebody was in there, and I would usually keep it down a little bit. But when the kids would come in and they would be anxious, the first thing I would say to them is, you can take, if there was nobody in there, you could take your mask down. And they would look at me like, really? And I would say, yes, you need a mask break, by all means, come in here and have that. You know, I would put an O2 sat on them, and generally it was lower with the mask on. We'd take the mask off and it would go up. Some of it was, you know, substantial. Others was just a minute amount, but it was mm-hmm. enough to say, you know, you need fresh air, you need to breathe. Mm-hmm. You know, God gave us our mouths for, you know, that's part of our, that's part of the way that we detoxify, right?
Yeah.
We breathe things out. We you know, we pee it, we poop it, we sweat it out, and we exhale it. So why in the world, as a nurse, the only time I've ever used a mask was when I worked in the operating room, right? Or mm-hmm. if you had to mm-hmm. go into an isolation room. We never, ever put a mask on for a respiratory virus. It just didn't make sense.
No, it didn't make sense at all. And that's something good to talk about, because let's talk about evidence-based practice as nurses. That drives our practice. And we know that we never put masks on during flu season, did we, Lori?
No.
They didn't tell us that we had to wear masks during flu season. Even, you know, if you didn't get the shot, you didn't have to have a mask on. We didn't tell kids, if you don't have a flu shot, you have to wear a mask. You know, sure. I mean, in the hospital, they did that as a sort of punishment, in a way, to call out the people that did not want to take the flu shot that mm-hmm. would protect you maybe from two strains of flu. You know what I mean? When there are millions of strains out there, you know, correct. People don't realize that either.
Right.
So, but the mask, you know, the breathing, this was huge. This was so huge. And we've had neurologists, come out. Dr. Avery Jackson, was giving free consults over video, for children to have medical exemptions for the mask. And, you know, brave people, ethical people were standing up and speaking out against this. And so thank you for, you know, offering the kids some reprieve. But as you said, how about their development? Do you think that the mask altered their development?
Yeah, I mean, I'm middle school, so I'm, you know, 6th to 8th grade, which is probably 11 to 13, 14 year olds. But the little ones, the ones that are in preschool and the lower grades, I do believe that some of the speech impediments that we're seeing today are still a result of that. I think the kids are probably 2 to 3 years behind in maturity since the pandemic. You know, I am not a teacher, but we are seeing it. They don't have any problem solving skills. They have no coping skills. You know, I do believe some of them at middle school age, they're just being so, what's the word I'm looking for? Like they can't solve a problem. They get flustered, you know, if they can't, mm-hmm. if their shoe is knotted, you know, they have a meltdown. And I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. It's just unbelievable. It's sad.
Right. Cause we have to think like your kids, say at 6th grade, if we even just go back 3 years, I mean, they were in 3rd grade, you know, and then they were affected up until 5th grade. Right. And now you get them. You know, so we're really seeing the fallout. Do you have any particular examples, like, of like kind of a generalized problem that you're seeing? Like, what leads you down the path of saying the problem solving skills they're lacking?
It's evident, you know, they're constantly in, you know, rather than working a problem out with one another, They are constantly filling out incident reports, which years ago they would have been something major that had to occur. But now they're basically, they don't know how to problem solve. They don't know how to work out a disagreement. So they come to the office and they fill out, some people call them tattletale reports. They're like incident reports. And our administration has to deal with each and every one of them. You know, they have to go through them. They have to talk to the children. They have to figure out, they have to do an investigation, which is time consuming and stressful. When, you know, just a couple of years ago, these were things that kids would work out on their own, you know.
Wow, that's pretty powerful. I think about it. It's like these kids in a few short years are going to be adults, you know, hopefully working class adults in our society. It's just a few years, and it's just, I think about it with my 14-year-old. You know, I pulled him out of school in 2020 because I said and we're in Arizona, so we opened up earlier. But they first came out and said that they were not going to require masks, and then a couple weeks into it, they said, "Nope, the masks are on." And I said, "That's it. That's it. I'm not going through this." And it was hard for my son because he was going into sixth grade at the time. So he was excited to finally go to the middle school. And, you know, I just told him, I said, "Listen, this is like a bad relationship. I think the system is so corrupt that there is, like, I'm helping with COVID patients. You know what I mean? I don't have time right now to try to change a public school system, you know?" And I said, "I need to put all of my attention to you and you know, my work as a nurse in the hospital." And because I was researching day and night about alternative therapies and masks and social isolation. But for me, I mean, immediately when I found out that we are shutting down the world for 2 weeks to slow this spread, I knew the implications of what that was going to mean. And we saw it happen in our emergency room. For example, I had a woman that came in with her 1-year-old and she was crying and she said, "He won't let me go near his diaper." She's like, "I just have a feeling that something is really, really, really wrong." And we, you know, had to assess him and we noticed that he was molested. And she, I mean, just even talking about it, the scream that she had come out and she said, "Oh my gosh, you know, I had my like adopted son, so to speak. He's been living with me for 3 years, my son's best friend, and he offered to watch him so I could go to work. I have to go to work and daycares are closed." And I felt, even talking about it, I have no words for that. So as a school nurse, you know as well as I do that most of the abuse situations are noticed at school, correct?
Yeah, I think that a lot of them got worse. You know, the worst thing we did was isolate them, you know, in homes where there could have been abuse, or, you know, like you said, in the example of parents that did have to go to work, who were they left with? Many of them didn't have food. You know, not that the food that they get in school is the best, but it was something for them. You know, and just being on their own accord and what they were into, you know, on their phones, on their devices. You know, we had some examples actually with some things that we've seen on their de what shows up on their devices, what they're getting into. You know, because they have public school laptops, right? A lot of those sites would be blocked in school, but not necessarily at home. So, you know, those sorts of things. I mean, the problems are endless. You could just on and on and on about them. But I think the biggest thing is the mental health crisis that we're seeing right now. And, you know, when we did return to school, their immune systems were shot because of the isolation and because of masking for so long. You know, I think there were some teachers who thought, oh, this is great. You know, our kids aren't getting as sick. Well, I didn't think that was true at all. You know, it's just that we weren't allowing them to be exposed to any germs.
Right. And then when they returned, what was that like?
Yeah, I mean, we came back to school in the fall of 20. And, you know, everything was so different. It was not so much like school and more like a, I don't want to say the word prison, but it was scary. You know, the kids were scared. They, with their covered faces, all you saw was their eyes, single file in the hallways. The bell systems were staggered so that there would be less kids in the hall at once. You know, at lunch, they had plexiglass in between them, you know, so they had their own little area. The classrooms, their desks were staggered. You know, it was every other student. And they had to have, I guess it was six feet. I don't know where they came up with the 6 feet from, but 6 feet between.
They didn't, them.
Yeah. Right. You know, and then when we had exposures, every teacher had to have a seating chart. And now, mind you, in the elementary school, it was a little bit easier, but in middle school and in high school, kids change classes, right? So that meant I, as the nurse, had to go and pull all those seating charts and figure out which child's, you know, was sitting next to the exposed one out of every class that they were in for every period of the day and pull those other kids. So that in itself right there was time consuming. And forget about my, you know, my kids who really, truly needed me, you know, the diabetics and, you know, my kids with medical needs. They, it was very stressful. We had to do the public health nurse's jobs because they required us to do this massive amount of contact tracing on a spreadsheet. We had to report to them. It was almost like there was an invasion of privacy. We had to, you know, inform them which child, which family, you know, names, addresses, dates of birth, and the one who did have COVID, the whole family was listed. It was just crazy.
Wow.
It was that, hours worth of work.
Gosh, I'm trying to even like wrap my head around what that entailed. Wow. I remember my boss coming up to me one day and saying, hey, I need you to go down to Ock Health and get a COVID test. And I said, for what? And she said, the patient that you moved to med surge from ICU the other day wound up testing positive for COVID. And I said, and she said, and we need you to take a test. And I said, for what? And she said, to see if you have COVID. And I said, and if I do, am I automatically off of work or what? And she said, no, we'll talk about it then. And I said, we'll talk about what are you going to ask me? And I already knew because I worked as house supervisor. So I was privy to all of the administration emails. And she said, well, we'll just talk and see how you're feeling. And, you know, if you have any symptoms. And I said, well, I'm telling you, I don't have any symptoms right now. I feel fine. I feel good. And I don't need a test to tell me that I'm sick. And she said, Jody, just go take the test. And I said, no, it's experimental. I said, right. How many false positives do we have?
Right.
And she's like, I know. And she wound up leaving me alone. But as much as I wanted to utilize that 2 weeks paid vacation, you know, I just couldn't morally do it. Right. I could not be morally complicit in complying with this when I knew this was all such a part of a larger sham. And, you know, I thank God that you are here speaking because, you know, people just don't want to talk about facts, about reality. And so let's talk about the reality, Lori. Like, how many kids do you know that died from COVID? I mean, even with a BS positive COVID test, did you guys lose anybody in your district that you're aware of?
No, I mean, we had some elderly people, of course, no children, and they were not even getting anything more than a bad cold. You know, my daughter had it here, and she had a she well she's an asthma she had asthma when she was younger, so you know she did get a little bit, but it wasn't anything worse than, you know, when she used to get sick as a child. She had a little bit of a low-grade temp and that cough. That was it. Kids were very resilient, and we did not see, I mean, I think the year before we had a worse flu than we did with the COVID for the children, unfortunately. And then the other thing you were talking about with you being exposed, you know, that was another thing that we had a discussion about at the beginning of the school year, was about the nurses. And they determined that because we were not in close enough proximity to them for more than 15 minutes. Like once we determined, yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy.
No, finish your thought. I know what you're going to say, but the audience doesn't. Go ahead and talk about that 15 minute or
Once we, well, first of all, we didn't do COVID testing in school. Thank goodness. They talked about it, and all of us said, absolutely not. We do not want to do that. You know, if the parent wants to have them COVID tested, that's up to them. But we don't feel that we should be doing that in the school. You know, that would be a whole nother legal can of worms to be doing that, you know. And none of us wanted to do that. But you know, it was the suspected, you know, children, because somebody in their house, or, you know, Joey, who they were exposed to 2 days ago, came positive with COVID. So we had this whole protocol, and it changed so many times that I can't even remember exactly what it was. But we had a little tiny area in my office where they would sit, and then we would move them out into like the waiting hallway, you know, where the parents would pick them up. And then the whole area had to be, they had this, I don't even know what kind of solution they used. They came in and they used some kind of disinfectant in that area. It was just insane.
Insane.
When you
And
look back
what you're
at it.
talking, well, as you're in it too, when your eyes are open. So for me, this has been a nightmare that has, you know, I'm repeating over and over again, talking about it all the time. But I do that because the world needs to know. People need to understand. You know, I even start my book off by saying, you know, it was the Twilight Zone. And for many times, I mean, even as I'm watching reality TV, right? I'm watching Love is Blind, let's say, okay? And just vegging out on something just mindless. And I see, oh, they had a wedding, okay? The groomsmen and the bridesmaids and the husband and wife didn't have to have a mask on, but the preacher did. And everybody sitting in the congregation had to have a mask on. Then they go to the reception. And now everybody has the mask off in the reception, dancing, eating, drinking. But the only people that have it on is the wait staff. And to me, who like to a person such as myself, who is a critical thinker and analytic, I look at this like, how does everybody not see how stupid this is? And, but they don't, and they didn't, and they still don't for the large majority. And then those that recognized how absolutely insanely idiotic it is, that we allowed that to happen, they don't talk. They don't want to say anything. They just keep it to themselves. And that's how more and more communism-like protocols and policies and procedures start creeping in, because nobody's saying anything about how unscientific this was. So you mentioned about the 6 foot distancing. Fauci, under in his Senate testimony hearing on the Oversight Committee, said it came out of nowhere. So there is no science to the 6 foot distancing. This dude literally went on TV, made it up, and then every news station parroted it, right? And then people started putting circles and plexiglass. And then what you're talking
And the
about, that
money that they
15
put
minute,
into it,
and
yeah.
let's talk about that. How much money went into that, which drove up the business to have to charge more for food, right? Or whatever it is that they're selling, they have to recover these costs. And then the 15 minute. So CDC comes out and says, when a nurse is in a high risk situation, they say a nurse is at low risk if they are taking care of a COVID positive symptomatic person for less than 15 minutes. But if it's more than 15 minutes, now they're considered in a high risk situation. And so that's where I tell you, right? Where I ask you, you have all these kids, say they're sick, they're coming into your office. Combined, you could spend hours with sick kids. But if you are less than 15 minutes away from one positive kid, you're low risk.
Yeah.
Right?
No sense. Not absolutely no sense whatsoever. Yeah.
None. Well, guys, what makes a lot of sense is this show and this network, which is AmericaOutloud.news. You are listening to Nurses Out Loud, and we are so stoked to have a platform where we can speak 5 days a week uncensored. Download the America Out Loud Talk Radio app, and you can listen to uncensored news stories from a variety of different hosts, attorneys, doctors, constitutionalists, lawyers, you know, you name it. We have it. It's America Out Loud Talk Radio. Just type that into Google Play or your Apple device and it'll pop up, and 24/7 you're listening to a show. And it's just amazing. I ask you guys to please like, review, and share whatever platform you're listening to us now on. Make sure that you are doing that, because more people see it and we get bumped up in the feed. And then go to AmericaOutloud.shop and you will get exclusive discounts for all of our talk radio listeners on a variety of different products, including ASEA. ASEA has a line of skincare, cell signaling supplements that go to the powerhouse of your cell. Every single cell, all we're made up of is trillions of cells. And ASEA redox signaling molecule drink will help aid in the function of those cells. So we will be right back after the break.
It's time and this is what.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Well, the year 2024 must be the year of the Patriot, and AmericaOutloud.news will equip you with all the information you need to give new meaning to the words Patriot Act. For our actions always ultimately define our words. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back. Thank you for joining me, your host, Nurse Jody O'Malley, on Nurses Out Loud. I am with Lori Kroll, who is a middle school nurse and also independent practitioner with functional medicine. She has Kroll Wellness. If you go to Kroll, K-R-O-L, wellness.com, you will see what she is doing and what she's done. So let's talk about that real quick, Lori. What led you down to functional medicine training?
So, you know, for probably 20, 25 years, I've used alternative forms of medicine for myself and my family. And when we were home during COVID, I did, you know, a lot of digging. And when we returned, I was really discouraged. You know, I'd come home many days crying just because of what I had to do, you know, in quarantining these children and knowing that the children and knowing that it just, it wasn't right. It didn't align with my beliefs. And I just kept praying, Lord, there's got to be something else. There's got to be another way that I could help people. You know, I feel like, you know, as a nurse, we want to help people, right? And I've always been interested in the why of things. Why is this occurring? Why root causes, which we don't address in traditional medicine. And I have been following a Dr. Stephen Cabral and his podcasts for a while. And I did a little digging and realized that he had an integrative practitioner institute. And there was a program, a certification program. So, you know, I made the discovery call and I jumped in. I did level one and level two. So what that enables me to do is I have the ability to order functional medicine tests depending on, you know, client's symptoms. They come to me to get to the root causes of things. And then I will create a bio-individual protocol for them based upon the results of their functional medicine tests. And our platform is what Dr. Cabral calls the de-stress protocol. So it's diet, exercise, stress reduction, toxin removal. That's a big one. Rest, emotional balancing, stress. Did I say stress? No, supplementation and success mindset. So we put together a protocol for them and then I coach them through it.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. Thank you. People do not want to go to the hospital anymore. They don't trust their doctors, but probably hundreds of thousands of people pulled their kids out of school, like public school, like I did, because I didn't want my son to have to deal with all of that. And so guys, check her out at KrollWellness.com. Speaking of, all the harms that have been done to children with this transgender or gender pronouns. What do we even call it? Like, we used to call it gender confusion, but they're encouraging this. What's the word? Gender identity, maybe. Anyway, how are you handling that in your school? Do you have separate bathrooms for boys and girls?
We have separate bathrooms for boys and girls. Now, so I'm a small rural town, you know, a pretty conservative area. We have a couple cropping up here or there, but we haven't gotten to the point where, you know, we've had to allow opposite sexes in restrooms or anything like that. They have to come in and use my bathroom, which is fine, you know, because for a lot of them, it is a phase right now, you know, and hopefully it continues that way. But I think there is one or two that have gone up through the high school and, you know, are still identifying as the opposite sex. It hasn't been too bad in our district, but I know that it is in others, it's getting worse and worse.
Yeah, I was just interviewing a couple talking about the flag that they had on, the teacher had on the door. And anyway, they have something going on with that. Mike Yoder has this Get It Straight toolkit, an activism toolkit, because if we are to, you know, start talking about transgender or LGBTQ stuff, they need to also be able to talk about straight people, cisgender, they call them. I don't know. I don't even want to get into that. But the parents had told me that the teacher at the beginning of the school year brought up the kids and said, hey, is there anything that you'd like to talk about? Introduce yourself to the class, let them get to know you. And this 10-year-old boy goes up and says, I like boys and girls. And the teacher said, well, what does that mean? And he said, I think that I'm bisexual. And then the teacher started talking about what bisexual means in front of the class to a bunch of 10-year-olds. And, you know, it's, I mean, so for you, you're not really seeing that in your school district. Are they talking about this? Are they encouraging this? Are there groups?
There are kids that are definitely identifying and talking about it amongst themselves. I think they did have a group last year that, you know, I'm not exactly sure who ran it. And so I don't have anything to do with that. But I think there was a group for those that were, I guess, toying with those ideas, an LGBTQ group in middle school. We don't currently right now, which is a good thing. But I don't know, you know, because it is a public school, you know, you have to follow what comes down the pike, right? And it's so unionized. I left the union 3 years ago. I joined a Christian union, and there's very few of us, but there's a couple of us that have done that. And it's frowned upon, of course, by the teachers union if you're not in that union, but I couldn't support it any longer.
Yeah, I could imagine. You know, and that's where I tell people too, it's like, you know, every one of us, we have our reasons for staying or leaving. And for those that are like you, Lori, that do understand that something's up and, you know, rather than leave completely, like, why didn't you just leave, you know, and say, this is wrong. I'm not doing any of this. You know, what prompted you to stay?
I think just the kids, you know, knowing that there were kids that truly needed me to advocate, you know, which I constantly do. It was really difficult because I was in a tight position. I really, my hands were tied. I couldn't say too much. You know, I took a lot of bashing from parents. You know, we'd get the F-bombs all the time when we would call and have to quarantine them. And I, you know, a lot of times I'd say, look, I agree with you. I can't, this is what is mandated through the CDC. You know, it was very, very, very frustrating. And I just hang in there. Not sure how much longer, but, you know, it makes it worth it when there are one or two children that you can truly, truly help, or there's a parent that truly wants your advice. You know, is there another way? Are there alternatives? Is there something natural I can do for something, you know, instead of ADHD medication or whatever it might be? So that's really gratifying when I'm able to give a little bit more holistic advice and it's accepted.
Right. Yeah. How long have you been a nurse, school nurse?
A school nurse the last decade. I've been a nurse for 30 years. My background began in OB, and then I taught childbirth classes when I was raising my own children. I have three children. They're all grown. My youngest is a junior in college now. But I stayed home while they were younger, and I had an opportunity to work at a summer camp. And it turned out to be a really neat thing because then I was able to bring my children with me and they had like the greatest childhood experiences. And that's what spurred me I decided to go back and get certified as a school nurse. So, and then of course, you know, that's a dream job. You know, everybody wants that position. You have no weekends, no holidays, and your summers are off. But I'm really burned out after what we've gone through over the last couple of years. So I've always enjoyed my job, but right now it's difficult. It's really difficult.
Difficult in what way?
You know, knowing that this could happen again, you know, what would happen again if the next, you know, virus
big
comes
thing.
Out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really don't know that I could ever do what I was asked to do the last time again. And I think I've got a great administrative staff behind me for the most part. But again, when it comes down from the state and from the federal, you get these mandates, there's not much anybody can do. It's very scary.
Well, I think, you know, yes, when those mandates and everything come down, I think when everybody, you know, comes together collectively, even if there's just a couple of loud voices, you know, in the administration that says, no, we're not doing this. Show us the science, you know, like we need to have a multidisciplinary committee. We need to bring in the neurologist, the behavioral health therapist, the school nurse, the, you know, the doctors. We need to bring in, you know, industrial hygiene. Let's talk about them. They're the experts in pandemic preparedness. We didn't consult with them. We listened to one doctor, and that was Fauci. And he told everybody, CDC, HHS, they all work together to come up. And what a bunch of idiots there. I mean, I'm sorry. I see it even now with my lawsuit, Lori. You know, I'm dealing with the government. I was just on a status hearing with the judge and HHS today with my attorney. And I'm like, these people, holy crap. They got three people full time working on my case, and they did not have questions or responses for so many things. People think that when people work in the government that they have reached this high level and they know more and they have access to more information, but that simply is not true. And once you realize that, golly, once you realize how corrupt this system is, where people are only wanting to follow protocols and orders so that they level up, so that they get a pay increase, so that they are at a higher level in the government. And they scratch my back to, I mean, it's like a big boys club or whatever they call it. It's too much. So I'm with you on that. I think that there's a lot of people in your position that can relate to, I'll never do that again. Mentality that will never happen again. And so thank you for doing all you're doing while you're there now, in terms of educating and stuff. But I'd like to ask you too, have you in the last decade seen an increase in ADD, asthma, diabetes, these kind of issues? Have you seen that?
100%. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Autism, epilepsy. You know, I have quite a few epileptics. I have about 4 on rescue medication, which that's exponential right there. You know, I've never seen that many before. Why is that, right? Why is it? It's environmental toxins. It's the food that we're eating. It's, you know, Dr. Cabral just had a podcast yesterday or the day before about a study on heavy metals linked to autism. Mm-hmm. Where are the heavy metals coming from, right?
Vaccines. That's one of them.
Right. Yeah, that's one of them. That's one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we're shooting up our kids now with so many. I think that 70 or 90 or something.
I don't,
you know,
see
within
that
the
last. Yeah. I don't know, you uh-huh. know, coming up from the newborn, of course, in the next 10 years, we might see it at that. But
yeah. Did you have a lot of kids that got the COVID injection in your school?
We had a good handful. And as far as any side effects with kids, I did have one boy. He was a sixth grader. He had come from New York and he was having all kinds of chest pain. Strange, like chest heaviness, chest pain. They take him to the doctors. So they couldn't find anything. I don't even know whatever happened to him, but because I don't know if he stayed in our district or not, but I do remember talking to the parents and they were like, they right away realized that that's probably what it was from. Long-term, you know, they never found anything, but long-term, I just wonder what will happen.
Right, right. Well, what advice would you give to parents that are considering homeschool? What do you think about the public school system? And I know that you're in a nice area, but generally speaking, what's your viewpoint?
Boy, generally speaking, I would say just do your homework, you know, do your research, see what alternatives are out there, get to the school board meetings, know what's in the curriculum, get to know who the children's friends are, you know, what kind of resources do you have in your area? Yeah, I was never one that thought I would be able to homeschool, and I never did. I never had to. We, you know, my kids went through school before this. However, my youngest was a junior when this went down into her senior year. In her senior year, she ended up finally saying, I'm just going to come home and do this Google online because every other day somebody's getting quarantined. I don't want to be quarantined because I'm sitting next to so-and-so who I'm not even friends with. You know, so she ended up coming home. She was smart enough to do it at home alone. Good kid. My husband and I both worked. So, you know, we just trusted that everything would work out and it did. But she did have a little bit of social anxiety afterwards too. This is a girl who's very involved, you know, homecoming queen, athletic, and still struggled a little bit, you know, so you wonder, and you know that those other kids that didn't have the same opportunities are really struggling.
Right. So
any other advice for parents is just to make sure you're doing your homework and your research. You know, if you can't, I don't know. I mean, really, really look into all the different alternatives out there because it is a scary world right now in public education.
Yeah, very. I think some good resources that I like is childrenshealthdefense.org. They're really good, all encompassing. They have podcasts as well as articles on there. Thehighwire.com is another good resource of information that you will get that. And I think those two, do you have any more to add, Lori?
Not off the top of my head right now, Jody. Those are two good ones. Yeah. Those are two really good ones.
Yeah. For children, that is. So I'm trying to think off of the top of my head, but those two are really good. And then you'll hear their different hosts and topics, and one thing will lead to another. And then you'll understand where I come from. I mean, for me, I'm fully vaccinated. My two oldest are fully vaccinated, except I didn't give them the HPV. My son's 32, my daughter's 29, and Benjamin is 14. And but other than that, we had all of them. I thought the government was doing the research. I thought they were doing the safety studies. I thought we had studies on all of the ingredients that are in there, but guys, we don't, we just simply do not. And everybody, this is how indoctrination happens, because for decades, they have been training physicians and nurses, to just give out the injection, right? They're saying, here is the childhood schedule. This is what children should have, encourage it, pediatricians, they get paid bonus money on the injections, right? Every time your child shows up for that well visit check, the pediatrician gets paid, and they get paid higher percentages based on, or higher dollar amounts based on the percentage of their practice that's vaccinated, right? So that's why you have a lot of pediatricians that will say, no, we're not going to take you if you're not vaccinated, because that's their side hustle. You know, that's where they're getting the money for these wellness. I mean, have any of us ever asked ourselves, why would we take our children to go see the doctor when they're well? I mean, if your child is pooping, peeing, you know, progressing normally, there's really no need to go to the doctor, you right. know, because and, the only yeah. reason they go there is to get injected. Would you agree?
I do agree, unfortunately. And like you said, you know, my kids were, they had all of their schedule of immunizations as well, except for the HPV. I always question that one. You know, even I remember, you know, back and forth with the flu shot, like, we don't really need that, you know, and then getting guilted into it because two of my children had asthma. Well, one outright refused one time. And then the littlest one, we ended up getting it for her. And I remember that year, they both ended up having the flu. Now, I'm not saying that that gave them it, but I do believe it decreases your ability to fight off infection. You know, it decreases mm-hmm. the immunity. All those heavy metals and the things, the additives that are going in there that our body doesn't really need. God didn't right. make us, you know, to not be able to fight infections, right? We weren't born with deficiencies in these things.
And that's right.
Recently, a nurse had said, a colleague had said something about, you know, oh, the is it a measles outbreak? You know, and I said, I'm not really worried about that. You know, she's saying how scary it was. And it's really scary because all these new mothers are not vaccinating their kids. And I just kind of said, well, you know, there were two of us and we were both on the same page. One remained silent. And the other one was saying about how, you know, how scary this is. And we just did whatever we were told. And why are these parents? And, you know, the other nurse had said, well, what about all the autism now? You know, and I said, you know, it's still a parent's right to choose. And now they are doing their research. And that's the difference. I think mm-hmm. COVID has waken everybody up. You know, yep. people are doing their research now and they're realizing, you know, children maybe don't need that. Maybe they don't need that that hepatitis B series at birth, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't need the erythromycin in their eyes, because why are we giving that anyway? That was mm-hmm. started to prevent blindness from moms who had gonorrhea. You know, right. they're tested for that now. So why are we doing that?
I know. You're right. I tell people that all the time. I say they overplayed their hand with COVID, because when they just kept shoving it down our throats, we recognized. And when I say we, I mean, really, this is from a study that was done. The people that did not have the high school education. Okay. So the people that had street smarts, let's say. Those people and really the higher ups like PhDs, they said no to this as well. But everywhere in between, that's where most of your compliance happened. The other, those two groups that I talk about, they were like, wait, what? Wait, huh? Why do I got to get this? This doesn't make any sense. They thought critically. You know what I'm saying? And that is a big difference. So they did. They overplayed their hand. They woke up a lot of us that were just blindly following, because like I was saying before, which I don't think I finished my thought, but we for decades, we have just been told in medical and nursing schools, just give it. It's good. It's good. And with no research or science behind why we should do that. You see what I'm saying? Now that we've realized that they were just pushing a narrative, and then doctors are getting bonuses and that's how they really make a lot of their money in their practice. It's like, okay, yeah, no, we're not doing that anymore. Because I think that now looking at it, all of these ear infections we get, the asthma, the type 1 diabetes, these metabolic dysfunctions, I believe that it is vaccine injury on some level. That's just where I'm at.
Yeah. I mean, and everything comes down to the gut too. It all destroys the gut microbiome, and that affects a lot of the things that we're seeing too. You know, that's mm-hmm. back to the root causes. You know, most right. clients that I work with have got something going on in that microbiome, and that's what's causing a lot of these issues.
Yeah. And then, like you touched on before, let's talk about the school food. It sucks, right? Our food pyramid, horrible. Like all of these things are creating this metabolic dysfunction in our society. And no wonder why people are not, you know, are not as healthy. Sincerely. I mean, you think about it. Dr. Artis said this one time in a talk. I think he said the Diabetes Association has been around since 1940. And they came out saying that they wanted to stop diabetes from, you know, happening. And you look and it's 80 years later and we have more diabetics than we ever thought was possible. Yeah. So yeah. What the heck is this organization out there doing? You know,
there's no education. There really isn't. I mean, you know, we have kids that, you know, new diabetics, and they just don't get that. They don't get the education. They just, I don't know what's happening. I really don't, you know, and then when you talk to the parents, they're like, well, why didn't they tell me that? Why didn't my doctor tell me this? Why didn't my doctor tell me that? Well, sometimes it's not their fault. They get about 10 minutes with each patient.
That's right.
Which is unfortunate, but because they're not taught about diet, they're not taught about exercise. They're not taught about alternatives. All they're taught is what medication to give. And unfortunately, that's not always the answer.
Yeah. Well, Lori, I mean, that's all the time we have for today. I really love, I mean, you and I are friends now, you know, it's so important to me. I love when more and more courageous nurses are speaking up because this is how we stand up. We come together, we lock arms, we speak in love and truth and science. And doing the best that we know to do. And we're just growing. I tell people all the time, there's a revolution happening and it's the nurses that are going to do it. So until next time, guys, tune in. Make sure again that you are sharing, liking, saving the show and reviewing it on whatever platform you are listening to us on. So until next time, be safe, be well, and God bless.
It's time.